Genius.
The fully realized vision of an authentic American genius.
We need your brains.
Don't you have a brain in your head?
Oh, then I will have to adjust your brain a bit.
Every day, Billy the Brain talks with the best guests in America.
Cool.
About business.
The boss that works for you.
Entertainment. Sports.
Turn now to sports.
And the local community.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time for brainstorming.
My brain is like mush.
With Billy the Brain.
Sounds like fun. Let's go.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Hi, this is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We're live every day, Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. You can also hear us streaming over the internet at brainstormingonline.com. My goal is to bring you interviews with thought leaders in business, entertainment, sports, and the local community. Together, we'll listen to what these people say and relate it to how we live and work right here in Ventura County. Brainstorming with Billy the Brain is smart radio with sharp questions aimed at intelligent guests. It's radio done right for the 21st century. If you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008, or if you're outside of the area code, it's area code 805-639-0008. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is revolutions. Each of my guests will be talking about a revolution in society or in their lives. My first guest is a music critic for several publications. He's turned his attention to protest songs to see the impact the music has had on society. We'll discuss his latest book, 33 Revolutions Per Minute. My second guest is CEO of Bannon Communications Research and a political pundit. We'll talk about the 2012 presidential election. In particular, we'll look at Donald Trump's aspirations to become president. My third guest has led both a harrowing and a hopeful life. She's endured homelessness and deprivation. She's also shown strength, fortitude, and conviction by rising above her past. We'll discuss her memoir, A Girl's Guide to Homelessness. And as always, if you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. Dorian Linsky is a music writer for The Guardian newspaper in the United Kingdom. He was the publication's The Big Issues music critic for 3 years, and he's freelanced for a lot of different titles, including Q, Word, Spin, Empire, the list goes on and on. He's the author of The Guardian Book of Playlists, a collection of his popular reader-recommended columns for the Guardian newspaper. His latest book is titled 33 Revolutions Per Minute, A History of Protest Songs from Billie Holiday to Green Day. Joining us from Great Britain is Dorian. Dorian, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm good, thanks, Bill.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you on the show, and thank you for being our guest, because I do like your book. Very thought-provoking book as you looked at protest songs, sort of a subgenre of popular music. And I guess it leads me to, reading the book led me right away to think about the age-old conundrum, the question about art, whether it's art that changes society or is art simply a reflection of society. So you look at protest songs, so I'm going to pose the question to you. Do protest songs change society, or are they a reflection of it?
They're part of the mix, I suppose, is how I'd put it, because they mirror certain concerns that people are having and can help to inspire them, inform them. But really, it's very much dependent on the audience. You know, songwriters can only do so much, and it's like a tree falling in a forest. You know, there's no one around to make a sound. And it's the same thing with a protest song. It only really catches light if people embrace it. So that desire in society has to be there in the first place.
All right. Well, break it down for us, Dorian, if you could. You looked at a number of different eras in your book, and you looked at a number of different performers and their protest songs. But in your mind, just so my audience has a sense of it, what do you consider a protest song? What are sort of the parameters?
Yeah, it's a tricky one because they're not really set. I mean, to my mind, it's a song with a political theme, political message, which is broadly aligned with the underdog, aligned with those who are not wielding power. It doesn't have to be left-wing, although most tend to be, because of the, you know, the governments they're responding to. So that was it. I wanted to kind of broaden it out from the idea that people often have as protest song as just the sort of Bob Dylan, Pete Seeger, guy with an acoustic guitar kind of thing. I wanted to show that it was, you know, it was hip-hop, it was pop music, it was soul. It was all kinds of music.
Well, your book is interesting because it does cut across specific periods of time, as I said, and you catalog the protest songs in each period. So let's just take a look at it. The first period was rather large. It was a period of 1939 to 1964. I mean, that's a big swath of time. At, relatively speaking, there were very few protest songs during this time. Why do you think that is?
Well, it took a while to get going. I mean, it really sort of starts in the late 30s with, I mean, Billie Holiday's Strange Fruit is where I begin, although that's a very standalone example. She didn't follow it up. There weren't other jazz songs in that vein. But also you had Woody Guthrie, and you did have a kind of left-wing, often, you know, this communist-aligned folk songs through the late 30s, 40s. And obviously during the 50s and the McCarthy era, that was disaster for, you know, for protest songs. And then they kind of had a rebirth via civil rights, and it moved from kind of unions, union themes to civil rights themes. And then you had the great sort of folk flowering that came in the early 60s with people like Dylan and Joan Baez and Phil Oakes. So in some ways, it's kind of like a prelude to what we normally understand at the great sort of 60s boom time of protest songs.
Well, it's a very interesting premise. We're talking to the author, Dorian Linsky, everybody, author of the book 33 Revolutions Per Minute, A History of Protest Songs from Billie Holiday all the way through to Green Day. And in that period of time that you just talked about, 39 to 64, you really did mention two of the quintessential people that we associate with protest songs. So let's start with where you started, and that was with Billie Holiday. Why did you start there, and what makes Billie Holiday so compelling?
Well, it's such a unique song. It was kind of unprecedented, and then it wasn't really followed up. Before that point, protest songs were very much written for certain audiences. They were often written for, you know, picket lines and protests, and they were designed to be sung. They were often, you know, set to already familiar tunes and designed to be sung by lots of different people. Whereas this was really where protest songs intersected with the world of nightclubs and the recording industry and, you know, pop music, in a sense. And it was also, I suppose, the first really emotionally powerful protest song. There's something about the arrangement, her delivery. The whole song has a power that no protest song, I would say, had before that point. And not that many afterwards, really.
Well, certainly true. Nothing before that had the power that it did. But, Dorian, the other name that you mentioned in there, very quintessential American name, Woody Guthrie. What about the influence of Woody Guthrie? What influence did he have on his generation and future generations of protest songwriters?
Well, he kind of, you know, ended up defining it. I mean, he was the key influence, or what, you know, I suppose the key influence on Dylan's protest songs. And he was such a quintessentially American you know, singer and songwriter, and he managed to introduce a lot of political themes into songs which had a real sort of grasp of the vernacular, a great storytelling flair. You know, he was friends with John Steinbeck, and so it's kind of the musical sort of answer to what Steinbeck was doing.
True.
And in a song like This Land Is Your Land, you know, that's not even necessarily known as a protest song. And it just showed that he was a great American songwriter, and that he made fairly, you know, at the time, pretty, you know, pretty left-wing, not necessarily commonly held politics, and put them in a very familiar, likable frame. And he was just a very powerful, charismatic songwriter, and he, you know, everything else sort of flowed from him, really, for the next, you know, for that whole folk period.
We're talking to Dorian Linsky, everyone. And Dorian, I mean, that brings up a very good point when you say This Land Is Your Land. That song is well known by all Americans. Everybody can hum the melody, even sing the words to it. But the question that I have for you, it was originally written as a protest song. Have protest songs really lost their meaning and their significance since the 1960s?
Well, I think protest songs thrive at times of great political drama, when a lot is at stake, and they certainly had that in the 60s. You know, things like civil rights and Vietnam, they fed that. And then for African Americans, different periods in the 70s and then in the 80s with hip hop, and that sense has has sort of faded. I know it seems obviously that, that many people would say a huge amount is politically at stake now, but they don't reach for music in the same way. And that's a very hard thing to kind of get to the heart of, why music has lost that role, you know, at a time of huge heated political debate. People don't seem to want to reach for songs, or if they do, they're very much novelties, you know, like Tea Party anthems that you see on YouTube. They're not songs with great sort of artistic weight and resonance.
All right, very good. We're talking to Dorian Linsky, everybody, author of the book 33 Revolutions Per Minute. And Dorian, you made mention of the period of time 1965 to 1973, which was a segment of your book. And for many of my listeners, this is arguably the period of time with the greatest change in the United States. You chose 8 songs from that time period. I found it equally interesting, the period of 1977 to 1987, a 10-year period, you chose 8 songs from that time period as well. So you gave equal weight to both of those time periods. In what way do you see the 1977 to 1987 as politically charged and as revolutionary as 1965 to 1973?
Well, you had a different generation. I mean, it was really punk, and you know, a lot of what political punk was about was with dealing with the sort of legacy of the 60s and dealing with, you know, the people they admired and the things that they liked about the 60s and how they felt they'd been let down. You know, how they felt that certain kind of Rings have become very complacent in the 70s. And what you had was a huge amount of just political consciousness arising out of punk, which carried through a lot of the big, you know, bands of the era. And so you look at people like U2 and REM, and they had, that all came from punk, that sense that politics was something that you had to engage with. And it manifested itself in many diverse ways, you know, from stadium rock to indie rock to hip-hop. So I think sometimes when you talk about the late 60s, early 70s period, people know instantly who you're going to be talking about. They know you're going to say, you know, it's Stevie Wonder, it's the Vietnam songs, it's John Lennon. But I found, like, the post-punk period interesting because of its diversity, and I wanted to kind of give it that weight and show that spirit went off in all kinds of different directions.
Well, it's very interesting. Let me just recap for that period of time, the 1965 to 1973. Here are the songs that you chose. Country Joe and the Fish, I Feel Like I'm Gonna Die Rag. James Brown, Say It Loud, I'm Black and I'm Proud. The Plastic Ono Band, Give Peace a Chance. Edwin Starr, War. Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, Ohio. Gil Scott-Heron, The Revolution Will Not Be Televised, and Stevie Wonder, Living in the City. A very representative kind of a cross-sampling there. But what I found interesting, Dorian, is through all of that, we're talking about political change, we're talking about revolution, we're talking about upheaval, you pay very scant attention to the women's movement. No song in that really represents the seismic shift in society and in our culture that the women had. So I'm going to push you. I don't particularly like this song, but why wasn't a song like I Am Woman by Helen Reddy included in there?
Well, that would be the only contender. I mean, that was the thing, the gay rights movement, which is around the same, you know, around that same period, that also took a while to find its musical voice. There really weren't that many politicized feminist rock anthems, although you could look at countless female songwriters who had a feminist outlook. It was not obviously protesty. I suppose I could have chosen I Am Woman. It's just not a song I particularly like.
Nor do I, but I think representative.
I was trying to choose songs which I felt were very sort of powerful in their own terms.
Gotcha.
And I tried to kind of address this later on, you know, with Riot Girl in the 90s, which was the first sort of really overtly feminist rock movement. But, you know, I think it's a totally valid point, and I think that there are, you know, different people would make different decisions putting together a book like this. And I certainly regretted the fact that there wasn't a song that I felt that was really strong that could represent early 70s feminism.
All right, a very honest answer. We're talking to Dorian Linsky, author of the book 33 Revolutions Per Minute, A History of Protest Songs from Billie Holiday to Green Day. And again, coming back to my generation, the audience that's listening to this show, Bob Dylan is the quintessential protest song writer of our generation. I mean, that's who we think of when we think of that. Of all the protest songs that you chose, though, you chose Master of War from Bob Dylan, which coincidentally happened to be on the same album as Blowing in the Wind. and Blowing in the Wind, like This Land is Your Land, very, very popular. Everybody knows it. They may not recognize it as a protest song anymore. But why did you choose Masters of War over the far more popular Blowing in the Wind?
I think I found Masters of War so sort of daring in its rage, so furious and almost sort of ahead of its time in that kind of venom that you really didn't hear elsewhere. And I suppose I wanted a real contrast to We Shall Overcome, which was the preceding chapter.
Right.
But what I tried to do with the structure is that even though each chapter leads on a song, all these other songs that you would expect are kind of in there at some point. So there is, you know, there's a section about Blowing in the Wind there. But yeah, Masters of War, I suppose I wanted some kind of tonal contrast, and I just find it such a kind of incredibly gruesome, violent song, and he never really wrote another song like it.
It's very true. We're talking to Dorian Lynskey, author of the book 33 Revolutions Per Minute. Dorian, I ask this of some authors who I really want to get to the root of the matter with them is, what did you get out of writing the book 33 Revolutions Per Minute?
That was so much. It was kind of an education in things that I knew vaguely about, but really didn't know the details. There were whole periods of history that that was suddenly opened up to me, and I felt like I was sort of going back to college in a sense. And I also found it very sort of inspiring and moving in places. I suppose it hadn't really struck me how difficult it was to be, you know, to write protest songs and to represent them. You know, to be known as an activist, as a protest singer, how much kind of risk there is, how much disappointment, how much disillusionment. And a lot of the stories in the book do end quite sadly, you know. I mean, some people, you know, there's suicides and executions, and more commonly, there's just, I think, sort of, you know, disappointment and falling down. And so I guess it left me with a real sense of admiration for a lot of, you know, a lot of different and often flawed individuals.
Well, it's a great book.
Sense of empathy, I think, for people who try to make a stand and make a difference, even if it doesn't work out the way they hoped.
Well, it's a great book. We've been talking to the author, Dorian Lynskey, author of 33 Revolutions Per Minute, A History of Protest Songs from Billie Holiday to Green Day. Dorian, if people are intrigued by your subject matter, they want to learn more about you, learn more about your book, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
I do have a blog, which is 33 Revolutions Per Minute. You can just Google that, and it'll take you straight there. It's a WordPress blog, and then I just try and put up, there's a bit about me, but also kind of comments on various topical things, you know, like Dylan in China or music in the Arab uprisings, things like that.
Oh, that's great. So that's 33 Revolutions Per Minute. You can Google it to find it out. We've been talking to Dorian Lynskey. Dorian, thank you so much for being my guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thanks a lot, Bill.
Thank you.